प्रभु ओम ज्ञान तिमिरन्द्रस्य घनंजन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकधामायं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्. So, this is the most auspicious occasion. Initiation ceremony, diksha. It is very, very auspicious situation. It's confirmed by the peacock. Srila Prabhupada has many times emphasized how important this is. In the Nectar of Devotion, this is how much he has emphasized diksha or initiation. He says the connection with the spiritual master is called initiation. From the date of initiation by the spiritual master, December 6th, 2005, the connection between Krishna and a person cultivating Krishna consciousness is established. That's the positive side. Then Prabhupada gives the negative side. He says, without initiation by a bona fide spiritual master, the actual connection with Krishna consciousness is never performed. So a question we're often asked, well, then how can you make advancement before you're initiative? Well, you can. You can make advancement to the point of getting initiated. That's also advancement. But until you actually take diksha, make that solid commitment, you're like a student, you know, hanging around a university and auditing classes without enrolling. You see. That enrolling in a university, registering as a student, commits you by a contract with that university to be very, very dedicated. You have assignments, you have so many responsibilities that you take on when you register as a student. If you're just going to the university and, you know, sitting in on some classes and enjoying some philosophy or whatever, chances are you're not going to have the same degree of commitment as a registered student. So to actually achieve perfection, spiritual perfection, this commitment, this contract that one makes with the Krishna University through the professor, you see, the spiritual master, that's actually essential, as Prabhupada confirms in Nectar Devotion. It's actually a very exciting moment. Prabhupada described in Los Angeles on January 5th, 1974. He said, deathlessness begins from the day of initiation, adhau gurashrayam. To enter into the spiritual life, the first step is to accept a guru. As soon as you take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, your point of deathlessness begins immediately. Immediately. And if you continue the advice and instruction of the spiritual master or the shastra, then you become deathless. No more death. So note the distinction here. On the one hand, Prabhupada said deathlessness begins at initiation, but then he gave a condition also. If you continue the advice and instruction of the spiritual master or the shastra, you become deathless. In other words, the ceremony itself is not the issue. The issue is following the instructions of guru and shastra. You see, simply sitting for a ceremony and then going out and having illicit sex and toxic, you know, that ceremony will not give you deathlessness. But the ceremony is actually a commitment, a pledge, an eternal commitment made that I will follow these principles, I will accept the spiritual master's orders, my life and soul. And if one holds to that vow, then one's deathlessness did in fact begin at the moment of initiation. In other words, you've been suffering for millions and millions of lifetimes. Sometimes a demigod, you know, Indra, sometimes Indra Gopa, a germ. You've been suffering through so many situations, you see. But now, if you take this vow, these vows you're making today very seriously, your deathlessness, your immortality is beginning right now. You're penetrating through the coverings of the universe, penetrating through the coverings, the time and space dimension, which has been dragging you through birth, death, old age, and disease under the influence of the modes. If you take this ceremony seriously, then you're actually penetrating through the material coverings and connecting with your eternal spiritual identity. So one should be very, very careful that whatever commitment is made at the initiation ceremony, that one keeps that. Of course, we make a commitment to chant at least 16 rounds daily of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, not other mantras. Sometimes they ask, well, can I chant other mantras on japa? Prabhupada said for Hare Krishna mantra, japa. And following the four principles. And so someone says, well, that will... Sometimes it's asked, well, if you follow the four regular principles and chant 16 rounds daily, we will achieve perfection. And I answer, no. What? No, you have to chant without offense. Also, one has to avoid the nama parads. That's why at initiation lectures, Prabhupada wanted this always to be given, the 10 offenses. So now in following our beloved spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, the Siksha Guru of all of us, we will describe the 10 offenses, what they are and how to avoid them. The first one is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord. So that's a prohibition. Don't do that. There's a very easy way to avoid that, and that is to take the opposite. Always be glorifying the devotees. You just say, well, I'm not going to blaspheme. It's kind of, if that's all you do, and it's like, it's kind of like, you know, the Mayavadis, I'm just going to stop acting. I will remain silent. I won't ever say any bad thing about a devotee. But if we don't take the proactive stance of glorifying the devotees, appreciating the devotees within our mind, and our lips and by our actions, by doing service, you see, then the blasphemy and criticism will come. Here and there, it's bound to happen. But if we actually fill ourselves up with appreciation of the devotees, we should try to appreciate every single devotee. There's something in every single devotee that's wonderful, at least one thing, that they're chanting Hare Krishna, if nothing else. That they've come to Prabhupada's the movement. So always try to find the good in the devotees. And then automatically, you will not commit this offense. This is the most grave offense. It is called hati mata, the mad elephant offense. We may sometimes disagree with the devotees, because after all, we have our own personalities, and we may disagree sometimes. But Prabhupada explains, amongst devotees, there is disagreement how to serve Krishna. You think that we should serve Krishna this way, and I think we should serve Krishna this way. So is the cup half empty, or is it half full? You see. The optimistic person, he says, well, it's half full. So he sees, well, we agree to serve Krishna. This is very good. We may disagree on the details, but the basic principle of serving Krishna, we are 100% in agreement with each other. You see. So we should never forget the positive side, even if we disagree with another devotee, and not allow our false ego to, you know, to pull us into some position where we start criticizing, even within our mind, if we're criticizing devotees, it's not good. That doesn't mean that we have to blindly think that every devotee is a pure devotee and everything he does is perfect. We have to discriminate between proper action and improper action. But still, we should always see the good in everyone. Always find the good quality. That's the quality of a Vaishnava. He always sees the good. Just like the honeybee, he is always going for that honey, you see, the nectar. And the fly, what is he going for? He likes stool, he likes sores, he likes garbage. So the devotee is like honeybee. And karmi is like fly. So we should not be like flies. always looking for faults in the devotees. Second offense is to consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent the name of Lord Vishnu. So we have to always remember that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Svayam. You can never think that, well, there's so many Hindu gods and, you know, Krishna's one of them, and in our sect we have this thing about Krishna. No, we really have to understand this is an absolute reality. Aham sarvasya prabhavo, everything emanates from Krishna. All the demigods are simply emanations from Krishna, just like we are emanations from Krishna, jivas. So there's a gulf of difference between Krishna and any of the demigods. Even Lord Shiva, who's in a marginal position, he's not a jiva, nor is he Vishnu tattva, he's Shiva tattva. Still, he is not on the same level of worship as Lord Krishna. He's also considered a demigod. So we have to be very careful not to minimize the position of Krishna and to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. This reaffirms the principle that one actually requires to have a spiritual master. So someone may say, well, I will easily avoid that offense, I just won't get initiated. Then I'll never disobey my guru because I don't have one. You see? But that's not the intention of this. This third offense means you have you're supposed to have a spiritual master. It's one of the items of being a devotee. You have a spiritual master and you obey his orders. That's what it means. To blaspheme the Vedic literature or literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. Well, we have to appreciate all literature. So, of course, there's the basic Vedas and the Puranas and the Upanishads. There's, you know, the writings of the Goswamis. There's the writings of Srila Prabhupada. And also, Prabhupada instructed us that we should write as well, especially back to Godhead magazine. See, we have to appreciate these literatures. We shouldn't think, oh, it's not written by Prabhupada, so it's mundane. No, Prabhupada wanted his disciples also to write. And any writing that's being done in pursuance of the Vedic version, that we have to respect that writing. To consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination. We see that it's described that one pure utterance of Hare Krishna has the power to nullify more sins than you could commit in millions of lifetimes. Now, are we going to think that's an exaggeration? No, you should not think that's an exaggeration. Of course, it depends on the quality of the utterance. That's the difference. You can say, well, then why am I still suffering my karmic reactions? I said Hare Krishna one time. You see? It's the quality of the utterance that will make you free. So we're still experiencing karmic reaction from past sin because we have not uttered Shuddhanam. Yeah. So we have to train ourselves. We have to practice how we can chant Shuddhanam. So by that one pure utterance of Hare Krishna, all sins can be wiped out. To give some interpretation on the holy name. Oh, that, you know, the grammarians are very fond of doing that. Well, Krishna means black, and black means ignorance. And Krishna, therefore, means ignorance. Where Jagdavi? No. We understand Krishna as their acharyas understand the word Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We take, not the scholars, they will twist everything. We take the version of the acharyas. And some of them are very great scholars too, of course, Jiva Goswami especially. We take the version of the acharyas to understand the grammatical meanings, not the mundane, you know, mental speculators who try to twist and take and try to kill Krishna, you see, by their interpretation. Seven, to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. This is very popular in the Catholic Church. You go out and you sin, and then on Saturday you go for confession. Father, I did this, 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 this. And he says, well, here's your penance to counteract it. And then you go out and sin again that week, and you go back for your confession again. this sort of cheating business is very, very sinful. One may accidentally fall down due to past bad habits, and that can be forgiven by the power of the holy names. But if we intentionally fall down thinking I will neutralize it by chanting Hare Krishna, that is very great offense. And that will ruin one's spiritual life if we try to do those kinds of things. To consider that chanting Hare Krishna is one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offering the Vedas as fruitive activities. Well, you know, I'm going to get a job, so we'll have a kirtan. I'm going to get a nice wife, so we'll have a kirtan. Whatever I want, I'll do a kirtan to get material thing. No. We simply pray for pure devotional service. We don't pray for material things. If you pray for material things, what will happen? You may get them. But guess what? You won't get Krishna. You see? What's the use of praying to get that material thing when it's only temporary anyway? What's the use of it? Better to just stay focused on achieving Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna for the pure purpose, the way the Acharyas have given it to us. Chant Hare Krishna for the sake of awakening pure love of God within the heart. You see? It's not wrong to desire benediction. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points it out, that we should always desire a spiritual benediction. To become a pure devotee, to conquer my senses, you see, develop love for God, develop an attraction for the name, develop a stronger desire to serve Vaishnavas. All these spiritual, purely spiritual things, those things we can desire from kirtan. But no material thing, you see. To instruct the faithless person about the glories of the holy name. Well, some people say, well, this is great, I didn't like to preach anyway, so now I have my excuse. Because all around Australia here, the people are faithless, and you know, I didn't really want to go out and preach anyway, so now I've got it. I don't have to go out and preach because everyone's faithless. Is this the understanding? You see? Thank you very much for bringing the coconuts. So, what is the actual meaning of this ninth offense? You see? What is the meaning? We know that Lord Chaitanya ordered us to instruct everyone in Krishna consciousness. Jare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesha mara gai guru hoyo tare. He said, instruct everyone in this science. So, how do you take those two things, those two instructions, how do they correlate? How do they correlate with each other? You see, what is the correlation between don't instruct the faithless and instruct everyone? This means that one should be expert in the art of preaching to know, because actually everyone is a combination of faith and faithless. You see, everyone has a combination. So of course, some people are 99.999% demons. But everyone has some, almost everyone, has some degree of faith. So when we preach, we have to find that aspect, and we have to preach in such a way that we inspire their faithless part of their nature, and we don't agitate the unfaithful part of their nature to become blasphemous. The simple way of putting it is this. If you're preaching and people are committing blasphemy, then you're committing the ninth offense. But if you're preaching and people are appreciating what you're saying, then you're not committing the ninth offense. Prabhupada said, if they become irritated by your preaching, then it is your nonsense. So the idea is to become an expert preacher who can approach everyone in such a way that they will appreciate what you have to say. By practice and by sincerity, then one can develop this art. So that's the meaning of not preaching to the faithless. Don't preach in such a way that people commit blasphemy, because then you have just set them up to commit an offense by your immature style of preaching. So try to preach in such a way that people are attracted to what you're saying and appreciate it. And there's some hints on how to do that. How do you get somebody to appreciate what you're saying? Well, the first thing is that you have to get them to listen to you. That's the first thing. They have to be willing to actually hear what you're saying. And how do you get someone to be willing to hear what you're saying? You see? They have to like you. They have to like you to be willing to hear from you. If someone hates you, they don't want to hear from you at all. So how are you going to get people to like you? Well, Prabhupada showed by his example. You just like them. Prabhupada liked everyone. He felt compassion for everyone. So we have to learn how to like people. If we're preaching, we have to learn how to have good feelings about the people I'm preaching to. We have to feel friendship and compassion for the people that we're preaching to. And if they feel that this person likes me, well, he must be pretty good because he likes me. Well, I like him because he likes me, and now I'm willing to hear what he has to say. So this is the secret of how you can go anywhere and preach to everybody. You just have to learn how to like everybody. You have to find something good in every person you meet, some good quality. And it's not that difficult, really. Prabhupada said that we have a lesson to learn even from the dog, how to be faithful to the master. So if you can appreciate a dog, of course, the trouble is some of the human beings are lower than dogs. But still, everyone has something nice about them if you really look hard enough. So this is how we can avoid the ninth offense. And the tenth offense is not to have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names, to maintain material attachments. Even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. This is a tough one for us. Let's admit it. We do hold on to our material attachments, it's a fact. So how do we get free from these material attachments? Here's one of those insider secrets. By developing spiritual attachments. You can't just say, okay, no material attachment. I won't be attached to anything. No, it doesn't work. Our nature is to be attached. So you have to find spiritual things to become attached to. The Vaishnavas, the holy name, the deities, the holy dham, Vrindavan, Mayapur, New Govardhan. You see, the more you become attached to spiritual things, prasadam, you see, Bhagavad Gita verses, Bhagavatam verses, bhajans. We have a whole rich culture. You see, so many things you can feel attachment for that are spiritual, that revive the dormant love of God which is sleeping within the heart. So we will always try to become more and more attached to spiritual things every day. Then naturally our material attachments will fall away. They won't be a problem for us. And then it's also, of course, it's offensive to be inattentive while chanting. There are different ways of being inattentive. One is called radar japa. You know that one? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Radar japa. That's one way of being inattentive. Another one is called Daivarma japa. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Ram, Krishna Krishna. That's if you're finding you're doing a dive bomber thing, then stand up or get up and walk around. Sometimes we don't realize until we woke up that we'd fallen asleep. But we have to learn how to be vigilant, not do the dive bomber japa. And then the other one is jabber japa. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You'll never so and so did Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Talking, carrying on a conversation while we're chanting our japa with someone, you know, just some basically prajalpaing, and japa and prajalpa all mixed into one program. Forget it. Don't do that. The best thing is to get up early and get those rounds done first thing. Focus japa, you know, before the sunrise, as early as possible, when the modes are perfect for meditation. So, in this way, one can be very nicely situated beyond the offenses. And by doing so, one will develop bruchi, or a taste for the name, and that bruchi will carry you through all the stages, all the way to pure love of God. If we're not getting taste, remember, it is simply due to nama-parada. There's nothing wrong with the process. We can't say, well, the devotees don't understand me, devotees don't treat me properly, therefore I'm not happy. No. If we're not enlivened and enthused at every minute in Krishna consciousness, it's nama-parada, that's all. We're committing nama-paradas. Because if we're actually connecting with a name, then we must be experiencing bliss, nectar at every minute, you see. So carefully avoid these 10 offenses. Okay, now